Welcome to Humanity Unchained, a show about the future of life reshaped by artificial intelligence. From practical insights on upskilling to existential talks about immortality, no topic is off limits. Welcome to the future with your hosts, Julia McCoy and Jeff Joyce.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Humanity Unchained podcast. I am Jeff Joyce.
And I'm Julia McCoy.
Today, we have an in-person recording. Julia and I are right next to each other. Yes. It's going to be a great episode. We're going to be going over things like the Rabbit R1, the Humane AI pin, and just some physical-based AI technologies that are coming out to the market, and what we think about those and what kind of the reviews are. We'll kind of want to do a review roundup and just get the general consensus of these devices and what it does for you.
Yeah,
that's important.
Absolutely.
I mean, after all, AI is supposed to be this thing that like elevates humanity and it's supposed to do all these crazy things, but we're seeing the opposite in physical devices, which
yes.
is interesting. So I want to talk about that.
Yes. It's interesting how AI is kind of divided right now. We have the replication of human reasoning, which is ChatGPT, large language models, machine learning. And then we have the replication of human behavior, like folding laundry, doing physical things. And I think as we're going to share with you in this episode, especially some research Jeff has done on this, and I've been studying the humanoids, the human behavior replication is not exactly there yet. And we're going to talk more about that, what we're seeing. But it's a reminder that we're still in such early days, you know? It's like you were telling me yesterday, you had a friend that you assumed knew what ChatGPT was, and you were shocked to find out, oh, this person said, I don't know what ChatGPT is, Jeff. So we are still in early days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was very surprised because, especially since I talk so much about AI,
yep.
it just goes to show you that he wasn't paying attention to anything I was posting. But
it's, find better friends, Jeff.
He's a great friend. He's just not in the loop. That brings me up to my first point is that we're seeing this, and this is actually, I'm quoting or talking about something that I saw on the Lutz Friedman podcast with Sean Carroll, where he was talking about how humans have the need to anthropomorphize.
That's a hard word to say.
It's such a hard word. Words are hard. This is what we need AI.
Anthropomorphize? Jeez.
Anthropomorphize. I'm going to put an AI version of that word somewhere.
Yeah. 11 labs.
11 labs. How we have a need to do that with technology and how we want to build things in our image, but why? What's the point? There's all this technology that's coming out and these robots that are humanoid in nature, but it really limits them. And we're not a perfect, even if you don't believe in evolution or anything like that, we're not the best thing to walk the earth.
Mm-hmm.
But there's plenty of other ways that our bodies can be made up to make it so that way it's more efficient.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think the bipedal aspect of like robotics is a necessarily beneficial way for us to create these robots that are going to help in the factories or so. And that's another form of physical AI technology.
Yeah.
And so we see like Amazon replacing, I forget how many workers in Amazon factories with these robots.
Yep. Agility Robotics is full. It's a big beta test in their entire, it's going to replace, I think, a few hundred thousand.
But
pretty crazy.
How far away are we from seeing a better version of that?
Yeah.
But, and the thing about it is that right now, the reason that they have robotics that are humanoid in nature is because everything that we have inside the factory was designed by a human for a human. Mm. And so in order for a robot to navigate that, it has to be like a human.
Yeah.
In order to complete this task.
But does it? I think that's a great question. Like, do these things have to resemble us? Is that actually the right direction? And one scenario I've heard from several YouTubers, futurists, computer scientists is, you know, when, for example, we drop the cost of housing by 100x with physical robots, and let's say, like, in the future, post-AGI, you're ordering your house, and it's custom built to your specs. And a team of robots goes out and builds it. And by the end of that day, it's all built, furnished, ready for you to move into where there was no house. And so the idea is that the humanoids building that house won't actually look like humanoids. They could look like giant spiders because that's the more appropriate build for something that's got to lift and put together pieces of lumber versus just the limited two arms of a human. So I think that's a really great point, is this could look a lot different than what we think. And Sean Carroll, in that interview with Lex Fridman, something he was saying, you know, we have some friendly debates in the office. Is AGI going to be here? There's some people we work with who don't believe it'll be here at the same time we do. We think it's, you know, we're going to see it in our lifetime. But something Sean Carroll said is we're far further away than we think. And the point he made, which was really interesting to me to think about, he's like, you know, when you're using GPS, and let's say you're on your way to the office, you've got the office queued up in Maps, and you decide you want a coffee. Well, that's human behavior. Did you want a coffee when you left? No, you didn't. You just randomly thought of it. And this coffee shop is right there. And so you're like, okay, I'm going to take a detour, go to my coffee shop. Does GPS follow that human reasoning? No, he said. In fact, GPS gets mad at you. Take a left, take a left. You missed your turn. You missed your turn. It tries to reroute you. And so systems like that weren't built with human reasoning in mind. They don't follow the human. And his point was, we have to rehaul so many things before we hit AGI, and we're further off than we think. Do we agree with him? Don't know if I do. Yeah. That was a great point.
One of the things that really fascinated me about what he said was that he wants to get rid of the term AGI altogether.
Yes.
And I think that's a really good point, because a lot of times I hear people talk about AGI, and the definition that I hear for AGI is more aligned with ASI to me, which is like confusing, because we do have those like different levels of what this AI technology can be.
Yep.
And so just to kind of recap what AGI is, AGI is artificial general intelligence. This means it's generally better than most humans.
Yep.
Artificial super intelligence means that it's way better than humans. But the things that go along with that are the ability to kind of self-learn.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that we would see that until an ASI. I think the classification of an AGI is its ability to complete most work better than a human. This general knowledge stuff. Now, there will still be specialized roles of people that, you know, do certain tasks or have a certain type of intelligence that an AI won't get right away. But that's still artificial general intelligence, because the general knowledge that it has is superior. And another thing is that, do we need AGI? And like we want to compare AGI to how a human thinks, but is that the correct way of thinking? Should it not be let the robot decide what the correct way of thinking is and not try to classify it as AGI or ASI? And that way we can come up with a different way of analyzing this new technology and seeing its benefits and downfalls without trying to classify it, put into a bucket.
Yes. One thing that an X user I really like to follow, his name is Wait But Why. That's his handle. One thing he said whenever he's talked about this, and he's just an independent researcher, he's like, I don't think it's right that we as humans quantify AGI, much less ASI. We're going to need it to tell us what it is. And I completely agree with that, because it's going to have so much infinite knowledge that I don't think it's going to be possible for us to put it in our own limited definition. So that's a great point to have it actually tell us.
Yep.
What's your definition?
That's something that we should do. I think that we should treat AI as an entity, not per se a human, but no, an entity that has its own way of classifying itself and has its own knowledge, because it does. It's trained on like internet data, but it still has its own knowledge. It's coming to conclusions. We're seeing that.
Yes.
So going into the very next thing. Okay. That video was playing with audio. My apologies. By now, you've probably seen the Humane AI pin. You've probably seen the Rabbit R1 devices. These are like the newest trend in physical AI wearable technology. And this space has me very, very excited.
Mm-hmm.
I recently went to go get my Meta AI glasses, and they unfortunately were too small, and we had a mix-up with the lens place. But I'm excited for that piece of technology because I do see the use cases for it. But when I saw the Humane AI pin and I saw the Rabbit R1, my first question was why?
Mm.
Why do I need this? Why do I need this piece of technology? Because every single thing that I think about when it comes to a piece of technology is that what does this eliminate from my life that kind of declutters things and makes it crystal clear? The phone is really, really good because everything I need is in a single device.
Yeah.
And if I'm on the go and I'm somewhere else, I can still check my email. Mm-hmm. I can still all these things. Why would I want a dumber piece of tech along with me?
Yep.
And even though it has AI,
ding, ding,
it doesn't have all these connections that my cell phone does. So why wouldn't we just build that technology into the already good piece of technology that we have, which is a cell phone? And I think that we're seeing that kind of play out with people calling the Humane AI pin one of the worst AI devices that could possibly exist. And all of them talking about, like, what's the point of this device? It doesn't execute well, doesn't do half the things that it says it's going to do. And we're seeing this kind of trend of people, our companies, creating these pieces of technologies that feel half-baked.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any thoughts on that, Julia?
Yeah, I mean, I 100% with your viewpoint. That's even why I was known as the anti-AI writer for most of 2022, was because I just didn't see a clear use case. And if I don't see a function, a solution, an answer for a question, then it's like, well, we just need to keep asking that question. And I think these are created for a novel idea, and it was created for that purpose rather than a solution. Like whenever I picked out Cosmos Scale to not only use in my writing process, it was the only tool I adapted to, still is, to the extent I've not put any AI writer into my process as deeply as I have Cosmos Scale. It's because it solved a specific problem, which was the time it takes to research a great blog that ranks at the top of Google, the amount of formatting and writing that goes into that piece of content. So that AI SEO writer solved that problem, and it was the only one that did. It did a great job. And so that's why I fully adapted to AI, thanks to Cosmos Scale, came over to what I've been told is the dark side. Very glad to be here, by the way. It's not. We're on the good side of this. And so I have this eye to see what feels like are very novel solutions rather than actual solutions. And I think, just like you said, Jeff, these solutions we're presented with in both of these products, the R1 and the Humane Pen, are really just novel ideas that haven't been fleshed out. And when I saw these come out, I was like, there's no way I'd buy this. It feels like a complete waste of money. Just like you said, like, everything is right here in my phone that I need done better than what they were selling in both of those devices. So why would I adapt? I'm not going to just pick up a shiny novel idea and say, okay, I'll throw money at this because it's cool. No. And I bet a lot of you listening are the same way. You want real solutions when it comes to AI. Now, let me ask you, Jeff, do you think that there is a better solution that's been built, something that would be the next evolution of, let's say, a wearable device?
Yeah, two of them, actually three. Three that I really have my eye on that I think that are going to be true winners. And one of them is like just a nice to have. So
are you investing in a shiny novel idea?
Yeah, follow up. I ordered the R1 just so that way I could do like a review.
Review.
But it hasn't gotten here yet.
Oh.
With most of these technologies, it's like if you order too late, it's way too late. But the Meta AI glasses, it's one that I'm very excited about because I wear sunglasses, one.
Mm-hmm.
Incorporating AI into sunglasses to me just speaks so much to like my internal desire to be connected to AI. It's like if Neuralink had all the capabilities built into it, I'd probably get a Neuralink. I would want to control my computer with my brain. I would want to have an AI assistant talking to my brain and being like, have it. Inner voice that was just like a Jarvis sitting there, be like,
no question. Would you be okay with opening your skull?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. If it was safe, yeah, I would do it.
What about like the risk of infections, all these unknown things with that chip in your brain cells, like right there in your human tissue?
Yeah, I'm not saying I'll do it tomorrow. But I mean, like, eventually I'd want it implanted.
I would wear something. I would not open my skull.
Well, good news for you is because Meta's working on a device that you'll be able to wear on your wrist that will analyze your thoughts and be able to create action based off that, which is great. So wearable technology will get there. I am all on the Meta train right now.
Yeah.
And I feel like I've been flip-flopping between like Google, Meta, and kind of like...
Llama 3 just put Meta immediately on the map for me, neck and neck with OpenAI.
I would say more Mark Zuckerberg put me onto Meta more than even Llama. Seeing his interviews now as opposed to where he was even like 5 years ago, totally different person.
I agree.
His demeanor, the way that he talks, like his confidence level.
His hair grew out. He's wearing some bling.
wearing glasses. He's training jiu-jitsu and going to UFC fights.
Oh my gosh, I miss this.
Yeah, he's turning into somebody that I'm like, this person is somebody that's confident.
Yeah.
I think that confidence when it comes to business is like a really important factor.
I've heard they installed Llama 3 into his brain. That's the reason.
even just this format of the Ray-Ban Metas are an interesting use case. They incorporated Llama 3 into the Ray-Ban Metas and allowing you to communicate with an AI assistant that's just, on your head. And I love that. I don't have to take out my phone. Yeah. It has a camera built in. I can analyze things that are in front of me.
That's really
Whereas cool. If I was going to take a picture of something really quick, I would have to pull up my phone. And it's eliminating something from my to-do list of wanting to complete an action, which is a huge step. So another thing that has kind of caught my attention is the Open Interpreter 01. It's the open interest. This 01 device is literally a small circular thing that you press a button and you talk to. It sounds very, very simple, but the thing that is that the technology built behind it that runs on your computer is very, very fascinating, which allows you to complete workflow action sets sequentially, which means that say that you were going to take a series of images. You have like 500 JPEGs on your desktop of like headshots of like your company. And you wanted to remove the background for every single one of those. Well, what you would do is you'd create a workflow with this device. You'd speak into it and you'd tell it to execute that workflow. And so it would go through, it would take each one of those images, remove the background, save it for you, maybe even rename it. But you can define whatever workflow that you want. And then whenever you want that task to run again, it already has that knowledge. And so this is a device where, the device itself isn't that impressive. It could probably be built into a phone, but the software portion of it is incredibly fascinating.
Yeah, I agree. It's kind of the next level of computing almost in my mind. Like when I think, what would I want to see happen as the next phase of my efficiency? Well, it would be to step away from my computer more, have real life conversations, be outside in nature. And if I can run functions on my actual computer from a little device I'm holding through a conversation, that is so innovative.
Yep.
So I completely agree. This device, which Jeff has ordered and I will be borrowing, we're very excited about.
Very excited. And then from there, this is one that actually Justin, the founder of Hunting the Scale, put me onto. It's called the Limitless. Is it AI? We'll see. It'll both come up. It's the Limitless Pendant.
Oh.
This is a wearable device that does something a little bit different. It's not trying to be the all-in-one AI solution for you. It's trying to do one thing very, very well, and that is conversations. This will, you wear it around your neck or anywhere in your body, it records all day. And so it records your conversations, it can create to-do lists from those conversations, it can summarize everything for you, and then store that information.
Wow.
Now, a thing that is really important about a device like this is that they have privacy in mind, which is really, really awesome.
Yeah, that's important.
So there's an opt-in function to where when you're communicating, talk to somebody, you have to ask for consent for them to be recorded on the device. So it analyzes the voice of the other person and says, and it'll it won't translate or transcribe any of that conversation unless you ask the person, are you okay with me recording this conversation?
That's great.
And this pin or pendant is something that I'm like, this is a use of AI done right.
Yeah.
It's not trying to replace your smartphone. I don't think smartphones need a replacement. I think that smartphones are fine the way that they are. Sure, we'll have innovations in incorporating AI. And that's what leads me to my next topic. But I think that this is just a wearable device that could help a lot of people with the storage of information to where you can then take action on that information. Because there's so many times where we're having a conversation, it's like, did I remember everything that person said?
Yeah.
Or if you were telling me, like, we need to create a shopping list. And I was like, I probably remember 2 of the items that you told me out of the, like, 15.
No.
So it's a huge time saver. And it's going to eliminate the need to take notes verbally. That doesn't make sense. It's going to remove the need for you to take notes about the things that happen verbally.
How does it store them? Does it go to your computer?
It's in the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Fine. So you'll be able to access it from any device. And... yeah, I'm excited about that. This is another device that I ordered. Those are the 3 that I'm really rooting for. I think that they're going to be game changers until we start to see something like the Meta analyzer thingy, whatever they're going to call it, that goes in your wrist that analyzes your brainwaves. Yeah, any thoughts on that, Julia?
Wow. Yeah, I'm fascinated. I agree with you on the privacy piece. You know, I definitely have concerns with, I think the ending of a lot of this would be transhumanism. And that's a topic I've explored a lot. And I think there's a lot of dangers there that we don't really talk about enough, where we could be tampering with a state of being that actually brings us down, creates a lack of critical thinking, creates dependency on the machines. You know, something Frank Herbert said in Dune, there's a lot of like prophetic elements in these fictions. He said, man gave over its power or their power to the machines, thinking that it would improve their thinking. And what it did was it created a lack of thinking. And so I see, like, while these are awesome and Jeff and I will absolutely be putting them to use, the concern that I would have, and I'm interested to hear feedback, I read books on this, have conversations, is, you know, what are your thoughts there? Do you think that this creates dependency on machines where we need to actually be critical thinkers? We need to use our brains in better ways because humanity as a whole isn't maximizing their capabilities even now. So will this create a dependency that is unhealthy if we integrate it too much into our human state of being? And that's what transhumanism is all about. You know, for example, you hear Ray Kurzweil talking about the singularity, uploading his brain into the cloud, which essentially takes your brain out of your being and it creates a meat sack on Earth. that's crazy talk. But like, that's a possibility that could happen. When we think about immortality, can we live forever? Okay, well, uploading the brain into the cloud, but then what does that do? And does that take away my state of being? And so I think it's important to think through those things and ask those questions and not just adapt to everything blindly, but ask ourselves the questions like Jeff pointed out with this pendant. You know, it is making sure you have permission from the other person to record. It is making sure that that's built in. So I think, like, you know, one of the things I've heard is that if you want to be a part of the good, your money speaks. So that's the tools we invest in, the things we buy right now are going to be really important to tell these companies what to build and to build with privacy, humanity, you know, critical thinking still in mind. It's an interesting topic to explore.
We are notoriously bad at predicting human behavior.
Yeah.
As a society. Like, we are real bad. We didn't think that cell phones and social media was going to be that big of a deal. When we know it, absolutely, like, social media and cell phone addiction is a real thing. That's,
yes,
like, we knew that it would help us, make us more efficient, and it did to an extent, but also created a kind of a form of dependency, but not in the way that we thought it would.
Yeah.
It's not like, I'll give an example. We have at our fingertips an incredible piece of technology that fits in our pocket that has access to all the world's information. How much about the world do you actually know? Not very much.
Good point.
People don't engage with the cell phone as a pure productivity tool, but rather as a social tool. And I think that with AI, we're going to see that compounded even more with AI being the intermediary between people. Because you'll have to interact with people less. Now, if you remember the first thing I said, is that we're horrible at predicting human behavior. And I might be wrong, but that's what I'm betting my money on, is that we all have these AI assistants that handle the communication for us, and you start to see less of your fellow human, or at least the humans that you don't want to interact with on a daily basis.
Yeah.
I think that we'll see a lot more personal connections that are amplified because you're able to spend more time with the people that you care about, as opposed to the people that are transactional. That's a horrible way of looking at it, but it is the honest way of communicating it. It's like there are people that will exist that are in your life that are, you have a transactional relationship as opposed to a very personal connected relationship.
Yeah.
And
you're forced to spend time because our world right now is driven by economics, which is built by finances and capitalism. And so productivity drives results because that's what drives money. That will change when robotics drives down the cost of everything and we simply put don't have to work as much anymore. And so I think you raise a really valid, important point, which can also kind of help us point ourselves in the right direction. Because, you know, I get asked a lot on my YouTube channel, well, what should I be doing to prepare for all this? And the best thing you could do now is find what gives you meaning. Because like Jeff and I have said, if money went away tomorrow, and let's say post-labor economy, all of a sudden it's here, which I think it's going to take a lot of time to implement that. But let's say that did happen. We would still be here in the office, showing up, creating content, writing books, interviewing amazing people that use consummate scale and innovative ways to grow businesses. We would still be here doing this because we have found what gives us meaning. And I think the people we work with would do the exact same thing. I mean, these people have move from entire countries to be here working in person. So
yeah, uprooted their entire family to come here.
Yes.
The passion here is incredible.
Yes.
That will lead us right into our last topic, which is probably the most interesting topic, which is Apple. Let me back up. All of these devices, the Humane AI Pen, the Rabbit R1, or is it two of these devices, are going to be completely eliminated as soon as Apple and Google roll out intelligent AI systems on their devices. Recently, we saw Apple talk about their OpenELM, an efficient language model family with open source training and inference framework.
Yeah.
Apple is working very, very hard on models that are able to run on device. We're not talking about like communicating with the cloud and like you have to have a certain connection. No, on device.
Actual device without the internet.
Right.
Insane.
Yeah. So the ability for you to have a model on device opens up a lot of possibility.
Yeah.
One, it's secure. Like your data is not transferring online. You have to worry about any type of encryption in that aspect. You just have to worry about the phone encryption with your AI data. Now, they could build in like backdoors where it has to communicate every now and then to authenticate or whatever it may be, and that could be an issue. However, mostly these on-device LLMs that are running are going to be able to complete a lot of tasks, and which when if you think back to our previous episode, we had a guest talking about large action models.
Yeah.
And we're seeing a lot of these large action models pop up more and more to where we're going to start seeing these devices come into play that are going to try to replicate that large action model process, but are going to be completely blown out of the water with just your cell phone. Because your cell phone has connections to everything, your calendar, your email, your contacts, all the things that are like really, really important to you are on your cell phone.
Yeah.
If you lose your cell phone, you're probably pretty upset. And I think that these models are going to completely change the way that we use our cell phones for the better. I will spend a lot less screen time and be able to do more.
Yes.
When this technology catches up to where I think it is, which is going to be the automation of your cell phone experience.
Yeah.
Your personal computer experience too. Like both of those will be completed with large action models and we'll be able to be outside and touching grass more.
Yes. It's interesting how they're using a different word, a different acronym that I really haven't seen a lot. I think this points to Apple's innovation. I mean, when you think about Steve Jobs stepping on stage, announcing the iPhone, like that's an iconic moment in history. And I feel like I've been waiting to see Apple do that with AI. And I know June's coming up and their conference and they're busting butt to be able to release this then. But the acronym ELM, Efficient Language Model. Could you tell us more about that, Jeff, and what that means?
It basically just means that they figured out a way to scale down the LLMs. Mm-hmm. That's the easiest way to put it. It's pretty complex. I don't want to go too deep into it in this podcast episode.
That's a great little summary. They made it more efficient.
Right. And like OpenELM exhibits 2.6% improvement in accuracy compared to OLMO while requiring 2 times fewer pre-training tokens.
Wow.
So it's able to train on less data. It's just more efficient overall, hence the efficient language model.
Pretty clear.
And I battery life is really important for these models. So having an efficient model that runs on less power is definitely something that is exciting for everybody.
Yes. Power and where that comes from is a huge concern because it's just, the daily cost of running ChatGPT. So it's interesting. I saw the other day that NVIDIA became one of 4 companies in the world worth over $2 trillion. And their leaps forward in GPU and the next iteration of what that will look like, where they're running parallel processes all at the same time on a single computer chip. That's what the Blackwell Foundation is all about. I mean, this is like innovative stuff that's making all these other things possible. It's just interesting to see that from Jensen Huang from Taiwan, and then to see Taiwan like make a deal with Arizona, build chip fabs here, coming to the US. So it's just, we're going to see leaps forward at this point where ELM didn't take 50 years. Like, what? I didn't see this acronym. Now all of a sudden, it's launching in a month. And it's just insane to see leaps like this in technology. We aren't going to live in an era like this ever again. We're approaching a period of acceleration where I think we will enter something like the singularity. We will enter a post-AGI world, and we will see it potentially in our lifetime. The date is kind of hard to predict for many reasons, but it's just every single week, I feel like something massive has dropped. And you see companies leaping forward. Like, I wish I invested in NVIDIA stock. I'm kicking myself. I still can, obviously.
Yeah, I'm upset about that one too. But I think that's going to be the end of this episode. Do you have any last remarks, Julia?
I think this is a good time to wrap it. We really appreciate those of you that listen to this show on YouTube and the audio version. Be sure to subscribe if you haven't. Give us a rating, a review that helps us just know that you appreciate this. It really gives us a kind of a head nod to keep this running and going. We do it for you guys. So to know that you're listening really matters to us. And of course, as always, if you have feedback, email jeff@consonantscale.ai, julia@consonantscale.ai. If you have a guest suggestion, if you want to come on, talk about these topics, please do email us if you have some feedback, you have some additional thoughts. And you can also follow the same conversation on YouTube. I'm at Julia McCoy. And where can we follow you, Jeff?
Jeff Joyce on YouTube or Consonant Scale, one of the two.
Yes. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you on the next episode.
Bye, everybody.